Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. This one, the end of the year. We're putting 2016 into the books. We're going to talk about the past year, what went well, what didn't, what we learned from it, what we're going to do in 2017, what our goals are. Brian, nice to be back with you.
Yeah, good to be back. Another week here and another year. How many years have we been doing this now?
I don't know. It's been probably 2 years.
I think so. I think I started it in like late 2014, and then you came on in like early 2015.
Yeah, and now we're ending up the 16. So, and this is going to be our last episode for a few weeks, right? You're taking off.
Yeah, we're doing some traveling out in Asia next week. We're going to be there for a month, so I don't think that I'm going to be able to get on the mic while we're out there. We're jumping around to different places. So,
cool. So yeah, we'll have this episode as the end of 2016. We'll pick things back up in 2017.
Yeah.
All right, nice, man. So we're going to look back in shame, hopefully not too much shame, at last year's goals and see how we did. I think the more important thing about 2016 is what we learned, you know, what didn't go well, what we learned from it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's still good to be accountable to the goals we set to last year.
Yeah, so we can kind of look back and see what we said. I think what happens almost every year, at least with me, is, you know, we set a couple of goals and then by the end of the, you know, 12 months later, at least some of them just don't even apply anymore.
Yeah, it makes me think of some Tom Petty lyrics. Most things I worry about never happen anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
I was thinking about that in business. I get so stressed about something, like 2 weeks later, it's moot. It is relevant.
Yeah, totally. Well, why don't we kick it off? You want to start with 2016?
I guess so, man. There's just one big hairy one that I'm not happy about, but it is what it is. So the big goal that I set last year was to bring Cartook into profitability. And that didn't happen in 2016. I'm not happy to say. It's for a number of reasons, but yeah, what we ended up doing was we ended up raising more money and hiring more and increasing our expenses. So I'm barely getting away with the term bootstrap web at this point. But that's what was necessary and right for the business. And now that it's the same goal for 2017. And my thinking is that I'm not raising more money. So that's it. That's it. So whatever we got right now, we're getting a profitability on one way or another. So our revenue is high enough now that if we absolutely needed to be profitable, we could. But that would mean cutting expenses, which in our situation, most small software companies, that means cutting people. And I don't want to do that because we're moving fast now because of the two full-time developers and Ben working as CTO. But you know, if it comes down to it, we could be profitable in just the decision, but I would much rather revenue just go up fast enough as opposed to having to look at the bank account and say, all right, so this is the point at which I'm no longer comfortable and now I cut expenses. Because that I assume, big assumption, that cutting expenses will reduce the overall potential of the company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually kind of finding myself a little bit in that position now, right in the end of 2016, is expenses start to really grow and cut into profitability. And we've been profitable all year, but yeah, I think this last quarter, this actually gets right into my first fail of the year. So actually what I wrote down is a couple of bullet points of what went well in 2016, a couple of fails, and a couple of things about what I learned. So I'll just start off with the first bullet point from those two. What went well? The service has had ongoing organic inbound leads with, I'll say, little marketing. And I've tried a few different things with marketing, and obviously I've been talking about audience ops all year long, but I don't feel like we've had a truly dialed in marketing funnel specifically to drive leads into the productized service. But we still have had pretty steady and healthy inbound leads for new sales coming in. So I guess that's something that went pretty well. The fail. So one of the goals that I had set out back in January was to double MRR for audience ops. And we actually did do that. We hit that number about 7 or 8 months into 2016. But now here at the end of 2016, we're not at that number. MRR dipped back down below it. This last quarter, you know, I think we've had a string of some cancellations. We're still adding new clients, which keeps things, you know, pretty good. But obviously, cancellations and churn is never a good thing to deal with. So, you know, we've been reworking some of the strategies and things in the service, and, you know, excited to launch some new stuff to improve, you know, value and ROI and things for clients. But,
Where's the leverage right now in audience ops? Is it attracting more customers, or is it reducing churn, or like where's your focus on? Because it doesn't sound to me like your customer acquisition is that broken. Would additional faster client acquisition make up for everything, or would you still need to address churn either way?
I think in the last month or two, I've been much more focused on reducing churn and trying to find ways to make the service more valuable and more sustainable for clients. But yeah, sales is not something that I'm kind of pushing on right now. That we're getting the inbound leads and we're closing, you know, a percentage of them that's not too bad. So
all right. At least you kind of know where the focus is.
I am looking forward to kind of a big, not a complete revamp, but a big change to our service. Basically starting right now, I had a meeting with the team yesterday about how we're moving to this like hub and spoke strategy and a little bit more evergreen assets that we're building for clients to try to drive, you know, better
results. We should dedicate some time to just explaining that out. I think it's useful for people, regardless of whether or not they hire you, to just understand what you're doing for people and why you see that as more valuable.
Yeah, I think January or February would be a good time to kind of dive into that. So that's the first point on my end.
All right. The second point on my end, and I think I'm not like so big on these like end of year goals. So a lot of them end up being non-specific. So this one is like that. It was just think bigger. And I think what I was talking about there is to not be constrained by current reality. And I have really, really enjoyed all the demos and sales conversations I've had over the next few weeks, because it just puts me in touch with so many different people and it challenges your assumptions. This past week, I spoke to a company that's doing $80 million in revenue. And they're not supermen. They're not aliens. They're just like me and you. They're just thinking bigger. They're just playing a different game. And it makes you look around and say, why aren't I playing that game? Why am I thinking not as big or not as ambitious? Or why am I satisfied with X or Y or Z?
So looking back on 2016, are there ways that you were thinking bigger or tried to think bigger?
Yeah. Look, if I wasn't thinking bigger, we would have stuck to the card abandonment product.
Yeah, I was going to say the new product.
You know, that really defined 2016, making that decision and then the experience of what happened with it in terms of trying to launch and then not being able to launch and then coming back to it and now adjusting and pivoting. And that was the year 2016 in general. So I'll take a little credit to myself in terms of thinking bigger, where I said I could just keep growing this, or I could literally go to a product that I think just has much bigger potential. That also came along with some painful lessons of, okay, be careful what you wish for, be careful depending on one platform, all these other lessons that came along with it. Another lesson is software takes a lot longer than you think to build, and so on. So I think generally speaking, I give myself like a B on the thinking bigger. But 1 year later, right now, December 2016 compared to 2015, it's still the same issue. It's still, you got to think much bigger, man. It's just, there's a lot of it is these mental limitations that I want to just keep breaking through.
Yeah. Well, I think just the decision to go into a second product, I think it's thinking, I think maybe another way to think bigger is to think long term and not short term.
Yeah,
because going into a new product, and I'm definitely in the same boat, you're foregoing short-term benefits that you, like if you were to just focus on card abandonment, you know, you could have really pushed on sales and marketing there and you know, maybe increased revenue incrementally you know, more than you would have. Right. But yeah, like this is, you know, you're investing time and resources into to a longer game strategy. And that's kind of what I'm doing with diversifying the product line, but getting into SaaS and other products and stuff. So
I think that's a really good point. And it's an apt point in timing at the end of the year. I think generally speaking, I remember something that I said to potential investors at the very beginning of the process. I said to them, don't think about this as investing now and getting your money back in a year or two. And the way I said it was, a lot more value, significantly more value will be created by the company in years 3 to 5, as opposed to years 1 and 2. And I'm just finishing up year 2. And it's really hard to listen to your own like advice or words in that way, because it's not fun to think long term. But
and it's painful in the moment.
Yeah, but the reality is that these things take longer than you want it. You know, the freak stories of 0 to 100 in 18 months, it's just not the normal case. It's the outlier. So I think that's a great point. Thinking long term is thinking bigger, is thinking more responsibly, is thinking in a more mature business way. Yeah, not easy though.
Yeah. So one of the bullets I had for what I learned is right on that same point there is that I really decided this year that we need a diversified product line with more scalable products in the line, because the productized service, it's profitable and it's growable, and the profit margin kind of remains fairly consistent, give or take. It's not as scalable, and I decided that I'm not really interested in just growing a team of like 100 people, and I wanted to get into more, you know, scalable products. And that's why we're now getting into software and a training product. So that's, you know, the long-term growth thing that I learned. One of the things that I think went well in 2016 on that note is that we successfully validated the idea for the SaaS Audience Ops Calendar, and we pre-sold it, had 14 people, you know, pre-purchase it. And I'm just getting ready now to release the MVP. That's actually getting into the next thing that I had there was, you know, we managed to essentially build this MVP of the SaaS in about 4 months. And, you know, that should be rolling out to those beta people by next week. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. And I think that's off to a good start. It's not even like inning one yet. It's so early.
Still warming
up. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but I think it's off to a pretty good start in terms of the validation and the early development of it. One of the fails, this is on a separate note, on the service earlier this year, I guess in kind of an effort to diversify or just add revenue streams, I launched a PPC add-on to the service where not only do we do the content for you, but I hired someone to basically run marketing ads, like Facebook ads, promoted posts, retargeting ads, and we would set up a recommended strategy for that. And so I ran it by a bunch of our customers, and like 6 or 7 of them said that yes, you know, I'll sign up for this when it becomes available. So with that, I went and hired the guy to do this, and we spent like 2 months banging out processes for it. And then finally, when we felt it was ready and we had been running it for ourselves, you know, fairly successfully, 2 clients signed on and they stayed on for about 2 months and then dropped that add-on, and it kind of fizzled out. And even when it was running, it wasn't a big, you know, boost to the business. And so I ultimately, you know, shut that down after about four months or so. So,
all right. So that it was just, failed experiment.
Yeah. Something we tried and, you know, learned a little bit along the way, but it was mostly kind of a sunk cost and a little bit of a waste of time.
Yeah, that happens. Yep. Here's something I want to ask you. So one of my goals is to keep trying to do less stuff, right? I feel like a lot of times I'm just not doing myself any favors. I'm just trying to do too many things, and then you fall behind and then you feel bad, and it has this negative spiral as opposed to just doing less stuff. I mean, one of the examples is we just hired a QA person. We were having too many bugs go into production. And I was doing so much of the QA. I would help scope out the features and then review them and then catch them in production and then document it. It's just, I kept having to think about it and worry about it, and it just took that off my plate for really affordable for someone to do QA 2 days a week. So that all these little things like help, like the automation and the credit card thing, just continues to do less, makes me feel better and better. But at the same time, I'm still very agnostic in the way revenue comes in. So we're looking at doing more services. And now we have a second product. And now we have multiple use cases, right? We have people who are doing pre-sales after their Kickstarter campaign. We have people doing recurring revenue. So in many ways, I'm trying to do less, but it just keeps expanding. So are you worried about that when it comes to audience ops in terms of the diversified product line? Right? Because it adds like these layers of complexity and you have to processes.
I think right now I'm not in a good situation in terms of like being truly focused, because so much is on my plate like right this very moment, as we're planning like three new products. The one is the service, which has existed, but we're kind of improving it. I guess on one sense, I do feel good that I'm very focused on audience ops as like my sole business. And I've got like product ties on the side and that continues to sell and everything, but that's totally on like autopilot. And I do write for my personal newsletter, but I just kind of do that for the fun of it. So I'm focused in terms of like just running one business. And I'm definitely, in years past, I used to try to really run like two or three businesses at a time, which just does not work. Yeah. I mean, in that sense, but right now I'm like you, I'm looking to add new products to the line and develop them all at the same time. And sure, it's not me doing all the work to develop these products. I have a developer, I've got the team helping out with things, but I'm definitely driving all three things. And I have to go from like day to day. Like yesterday I spent the entire day designing the new sales page for the calendar software that we'll be doing. But the day before that I was doing the sales page for the service product. And those are two completely different products, different copywriting, different messaging. And like, I have to get into a completely different mindset to kind of focus on what's the message behind this. So it's definitely kind of pulling me in different directions. And
yeah, I get very envious of a lot of people who have really simple, straightforward businesses, right? People who just do coaching for getting healthy after pregnancy. Like it's just one thing and it's a course and that's it. It's all you think about, talk about, all your ideas are focused on that, all of your ads, your copy. It seems more straightforward. I don't know how to say this nicely, but sometimes it feels like people of a lesser intelligence, I don't know how to say that politely, do better.
I know, because
it's just more straightforward. You know what I'm saying, right? I really have no idea how to say that the right way.
Totally. Like it's so simple and so obvious. Yeah,
that like some of my buddies from high school who just went out after like not even college, just after high school, and just sold mortgages for like 3 years, like did so well. It's just real straightforward. It's just this one thing and bang on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think that the bootstrapped software business or bootstrapped online business model, like you have to look for different ways to any way that you can drive revenue is your oxygen. Like you need that oxygen, so you need to find ways to make it work. And like I think the first 18 months of Audience Ops, I was not 100%, but pretty focused on the productized service, because that's what's been driving the most revenue the fastest to give enough oxygen into the business. But now that we can reinvest that profit into new products, now it's about investing in the long term. And in order to do that, we do need more scalable products, but we don't have investors, and we don't have a long runway for this. So we need to find revenue any way that we can. So I think it's a give and take. I think it's important to be building one business at a time, but when you're bootstrapped, like you definitely have a shorter runway and whatever you can do to keep that going. And that often means doing a lot of things,
I know. I think it hurts efficiency a lot. I think it will require courage to, if among the three or four things you're doing, one of them stands out as the winner, to drop the other ones is difficult. Right. We talk about that sometimes, like, is there going to be a time where we stop taking new customers for the card abandonment product? Because right now, it feels like it's on autopilot. It's not really on autopilot, right? It is taking up energy and time and space and all that.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the lists here. What do you have next for 2016? Anything?
So, let's see how to frame this. Like my overall business goal, I don't have a revenue number goal because I think our expenses will climb with additional revenue. Right. And we've talked about that a lot. The decoupling, the where's the leverage point where revenue grows not just a little faster than expenses, but a lot faster than expenses. And I think that's where my focus is. I don't know what else to call it, but like breakout. So basically, it's time for the reward. It's been a lot of risk and a lot of work, and now it's time to get paid. That's kind of how I think about it. Like, we've been developing stuff for 2 years. We got a bunch of smart people who could be making a lot more money doing work for other people. And now it's time for the reward part of it. That's kind of how I see this year. Like, all right, cool. I'm not really okay with another year of slow growth, hoping that it all pays back for the year after. I think it's kind of like breakout time. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about it. And
especially like what you've been doing in the last few weeks and what we talked about last episode, I think some new developments are really starting to click into place that I think you are kind of queued up for, you know, that breakout 2017.
That's kind of how it feels. And I really want to make sure that happens, because it's been a long year. 2016, I thought was going to be the hockey stick. I thought that release of the one page checkout was going to be the total game changer. And if it is delayed by 6-9 months or so, that's cool, but it still needs to happen. And it feels like the beginnings of it. You know how I know? Because Patrick Campbell, in his emails to me from ProfitWell, is not telling me that I'm behind. If you subscribe to ProfitWell, you get a daily email that says, oh, you're behind. You know, you've gained, you know, 26% of your MRR goal and you're 48% through the month. So every day he sends that email. It's automated, obviously. But lately those emails are, you're ahead. you know, you've added 68% of your MRR goal and you're 26% through the month. I'm like, all right, Patrick, I'm ahead. There we go.
Very nice. So,
yep. Because it was a few months of every day, Patrick just telling me, you're behind. You're behind.
Yeah.
You're behind.
Every single day.
Yeah. Like, I know, Patrick. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how I see it. I see this as the breakout year for all the work that we've done. Now it's time for the reward. And I want that for myself. And I want that for the team also, because they've been working crazy hard. And I want them to see and feel the rewards.
Yeah. Cool. So just to cap off 2016, I've got one more thing that kind of went well, one more fail, and yeah, I guess one more thing that I learned. So I wrote down that, you know, we really perfected the roles and the processes for the service, and that includes hiring and training new writers and managers. And so these things were already pretty good, like pretty in place at the beginning of 2016. Like, you know, we had been growing and through 2015, and systems started to really fall into place. But in 2016, like, we really defined, like, okay, this service requires these roles: writer, editor, project manager, designer, and assistant. Like, we know that those are the roles that need to be filled in order to execute the service. And by the end of 2016, I didn't have to actually do the hiring and the training of those roles. Like, now we have not only project managers in place, but a team manager who kind of manages everyone, and she hires new writers and vets them. So all that is basically on kind of autopilot at this point. And I guess the other aspect of that is that right now, as we're like improving the service and changing strategies and things, I also have the team helping out with reworking our processes. It's not so much like me changing the process and giving them the new instructions. It's, hey guys, these are the goals. These are the things that we need to change. You guys kind of work out the new processes and then show them to me, and I'll kind of approve them or give you notes. So the team is really up and running in that regard, which I think is good. The one kind of fail related to that is, I guess the one aspect that I'm still heavily involved in is sales. So everything that happens before the client makes the first payment is still basically all me. And so this was a fail. I talked about it on the podcast earlier in the year. I delegated sales to somebody who was on the team. It wasn't a new salesperson. It was somebody who's with us since the beginning. He's actually still on the team in an editing role. But I basically trained him to do what I had been doing on the consultation calls. And he did it for like 3 months or so. And he did a pretty good job. He actually closed a few sales. But I ultimately went back on that decision and took sales back over myself. To be honest, I don't really remember my thought process at the time. I think it was just, maybe it was a combination of like the compensation package was not really aligned correctly, and leads were coming in a little bit confused about the value proposition, and I don't know. And then he had closed a bunch of sales, but then there was like a month where it were not many closed. And so I just, you know, went back in and kind of took it back over. I think that was a fail. But at the same time, I think that was around the time when I started to decide that we need to get into launching a SaaS and these other products. And so I kind of came to the conclusion that like, I'm not really looking to drastically scale up the service side of the business right now. So I'm fine with handling a couple of sales calls a week and letting that go on maintenance mode. Yes, these are appointments on my calendar that I have to show up for and do the sales calls and the follow-up, but that only amounts to, I don't know, 5 to 8 hours a week of my time. And, you know, like,
to invest in sales and a process and compensation, that doesn't make sense to you.
Right. And yeah. So, and I guess, you know, to really keep the service profitable, it was still profitable with the sales guy, but you know, just to the whole point of the service right now is to fund everything else that we're doing, because we're reinvesting all that into product development. So, you know, trying to keep that lean, and I can do a couple sales calls a week, and that's kind of where I'm at right now with it. And I guess that leads into the thing that one of the conclusions I'm coming to about the service is I definitely don't intend to wind it down at all. Like, it's definitely going to be a part of Audience Ops for the long foreseeable future. But one thought that I'm having about it is to, not right now, but eventually limit its size and kind of cap it at a certain size and say the service will only serve X number of clients or drive X MRR, and it's going to have this limited team on it, and that'll be enough to kind of sustain itself as a small part of the overall revenue. Like, the idea is just to keep that as like a kind of self-sustaining profit center while all the resources and focus go into growing the SaaS and the other products.
All right. I don't know what to think about that, Brian. you know?
Well, like, part of it is like to keep it more exclusive and keep a waiting list. And if someone cancels, then we just fill their spot with someone.
But the pricing.
Well, yeah. And pricing, you know, would go up with that too. And yeah.
I think that's the whole thing. I think that's the whole thing. If you could basically, well, no, not churn everyone out for higher prices, but that's not going to make sense. You obviously want to hold on to your existing. But if you can do the same work for more money and your team could cost about the same to keep running, but it just makes more money, then it will accomplish that goal of funding everything else, but in an even healthier way. So what I was saying was, I don't tweet very often, but I had a day where I was just really busy, and it was soon after we raised prices to $300 a month. And it was in that week where I did like, whatever, 11 demos or something. And just something came to my mind, and I sent out a tweet. I said, keep new plan, keep raising prices until no longer busy.
Right.
So just like, if you have too much shit to deal with.
It's not, yeah, but it, you know, I think the whole thing about raising prices, it's not, I don't see that as an urgent need right now. you know, and to be honest, I haven't really seen that up until now. I think there will come that time, especially if we go to a more limited model. You know, the service is profitable, and you know, the focus right now is just to kind of maintain it and to keep growing it. I'm not limiting it right now, but that's essentially going to fund the rest of the product development, and that's kind of the initiative I'm doing right now. Like if I were to really tweak pricing, I feel like I would need to focus a lot more energy on the service side of it, and then like deal with the with whatever ramifications happen from changing around pricing, and like that's just not on my plate right now, and I don't see like an urgent need to do it.
I hear you. It feels like one of these situations where it's really easy from the outside to look at it and say, if you raise pricing, you'll make more money and you'll be less busy and whatever else. But one of the things about pricing that makes it really difficult is when you're inside of it and you know all these different factors, it makes it much more difficult than it seems. I have experienced that. I think everyone experiences that. Otherwise, everyone would just raise their prices without thinking about it. But it does feel like a situation where an outsider, a consultant, someone coming in, maybe the purest form of that is if somebody acquired Audience Ops right now, what would they do? And I think that's the first thing they would do. They'd say, this works. This is this beautiful machine that attracts people, and the team does all the work. If I can just raise the prices, the business just gets healthier while everything else stays the same.
Yeah. I'm definitely not saying I'm against the idea of raising prices. I absolutely plan on raising prices. Like, it's definitely in the roadmap. It's just that I don't feel like, I know I probably keep saying this all year long. It's like, we're going to raise prices. But my thinking is, once we have the other products available to sell, that's when it makes sense to raise the prices. But right now, we're investing all this money into developing those products. So we kind of just need the service to keep doing what it's doing and not
right, really just do its thing.
Yeah.
Right. I like that. I think that makes sense. In many ways, we're doing the same thing with the recovery product. And I think I can commit to you, Brian. I will not bring up raising prices for like three episodes.
No, you know what? I hope you do. I hope you keep the pressure on, because I probably need it. So anyway, that's about all I had for 2016. Should we get into next year?
The personal stuff. I don't know how much people really want to hear us talking about wanting to be a better dad and husband. I think a lot of that stuff goes without saying. If anything business related, I would say my goal is to have a more balanced 2017. You know, I would say about the past 10 years has been, you know what, I'm just going to sacrifice the personal side for another year, a little longer, because that's going to improve things. And then when I have more free time and so on, and it kind of feels like, all right, I need to stop saying that, because this whole thing is just going to take a while. And even if things become amazing financially and I have no more worries, I'm still going to be working and you still need a balance. So I think overall, just continuing to acknowledge that the balance is really important. It is a little difficult with people in our situations with kids our age. It's kind of those few years where we talked about this with Rob and Sherry, where they said, look, it's just insane until your kids start to actually go to school and you have more time to yourself. Like right now, we've had a snow day 2 days in a row here in Portland. So the kids are done, and then it's vacation. The kids aren't going back to school until January. So the next 2 weeks are just – they're just nuts. There's just three kids in the house. So the balance is kind of on hold overall, but you shouldn't let your personal interests and hobbies and passions completely go dormant, because they will fade.
It's true. It's so true. I think one of my goals in 2016 early on was to get to a point where I'm working like 20 or 25 hours a week. And I think I actually did achieve that for most of the year, especially while we were traveling. There were weeks there where I didn't do any work. I was traveling. And then we did, you know, we had our second child in 2016, back in April. And then we moved into a house. So that whole beginning of the year was like crazy when we were coming out of the trip and settling back into the new house.
New house and a baby.
Yeah. All literally at the same time, and doing renovations on the house. All in the same month, craziness. But yeah, by the summer, we were settled in here. And I think that's when I actually did start to lighten up on the hours that I've been working and stopping work, you know, earlier in the day than I used to, around, you know, 4 o'clock or so Fridays, you know, working much less than that. Now, here we are near the end of the year, and I started to ramp it back up again because I'm focused on so many things right now with the business. That combined with next week, I'm getting on a plane and we're going to be traveling for a month straight where I expect to not really work a whole lot. So I'm trying to crunch as much as I possibly can until the very last minute I step onto that plane and then right, I'm free just, for a month.
Yeah, it's the opposite of what most people, at least mentally, they're starting to check out. You know, it's middle of December.
I'm literally looking at a specific time on Tuesday of next week when it's like, that's the buzzer. I could, as whatever I can get in up until that hour, I'm good.
Yeah, there's also like from when you have a team, there's only so much you can expect. Right. Yeah, I don't expect a hardcore full week that last week of the year. You shouldn't. Oh, yeah. People want to be with their families. It's part of the deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Well, yeah. So 2017, what do we got?
2017. Like goals that we want to write down. I mean, I think
goals for the year
we talked about. Yeah. I don't know. I think I kind of weaved mine in along with the other stuff, the breakout year, the more balance, doing less, time to get paid. That's kind of what I'm looking at in 2017. I definitely don't want any new products. No more kids.
Shutting that store down.
Doing less, making a lot more.
All right. So I had a couple minutes the other day. I just put down a couple bullet points. I don't know if you'd really consider these goals. These might be more like specific metrics that I'm going to try to track at least in the beginning. So I'll just kind of fire through them pretty quick. The SaaS feature set should be public launch ready by March of this year. So, you know, almost 3 months away. And that should essentially be like 80% feature complete, meaning like we've built most of the key features and it's ready to start. This is past the beta. Like the beta is happening this month. We're getting those people in now. The next goal is March, and it should be ready to kind of launch to the public, and not complete, but 80%.
Okay. Do you have like a number of customers or revenue goal for the software?
So that's coming up here. How I would define a successful SaaS launch, I wrote down 10 new paying customers within its first 30 days of being launched to the public. So we have
new outside of the group.
Right. We have 14 who've prepaid. So I'd like to see 10 additional on top of that. Once we say, these are the plans, you can come and start a free trial and then sign up within the first 30 days, 10 new paying customers. I'll consider that a successful first month.
I'd say so. 10 within the first month.
Yep.
That's nice.
And then by the end of 2017, I wrote down the goal of 100 SaaS paying customers total. I don't really know what to think about that number. I kind of think it's actually low. I think we should do better than that, given that we'll... Assuming we launch in March, you know, 9 months, and
I think a lot of it depends on the leverage that the existing user base gives you. Meaning, when you launch it, are there a bunch of issues that you need to take care of and a bunch of features that you didn't know about and you have to go back into development? Or is it, whoa, people are happy, now let's highlight the fact that people are happy and what they're doing with it and start focusing on marketing? I think that's what it is.
These things are just so hard to predict when it's like ground zero. Anyway, that's the number that I wrote down. I'm trying to make these as measurable as I can. The next one I had is about the training product that's in development. The goal is to launch version one of that in April of 2017. So that one, you know, it's the only thing holding me back on that is time. And I'm going to be the one primarily working on that project. So, you know, it's not the kind of thing like, oh, I hope these marketing things come. It's just a matter of getting the thing built and launched. It's already underway. I'd say it's probably like 20% built, but I've paused work on it because I'm working on other things. So, and I've got travel coming up. So I wrote down April as a realistic time frame. I was hoping to do it more like, you know, February, but I'm just going to say April on that. That'll be more realistic. And then I had successful launch of that training product, 10 sales within 30 days. So that'll be just one-time purchases. I'd like to see at least 10 sales. I think that's probably more than doable. These could be like completely embarrassing statements when once I get up there, but
I mean, who knows? But who knows?
This next one is something that I've had on my list for years now, and I've never really cracked it as far as I know, which is launching an automated funnel, specifically a webinar funnel, and optimize PPC campaigns to a point where they are profitable and self-sustaining. I wrote that down.
Okay.
So
that's good. It's tough to know the acquisition model. At least that's what we found. We keep having plans like, okay, we're going to do webinars. And then all of a sudden our product changes and the price point's much higher. And then all of a sudden you look at what you want to do for acquisition. And I don't know if a $300 a month is going to work over webinar. It might need to be webinar that then leads into a consultation. So it's a little tricky when it comes to that. Hopefully it's just more straightforward.
All I know is that right now, like I've tried running ads in the past for various experiments and I've done various webinars and I've done different things. But all I know is that right now, none of those things are running. And the only reason for that is that they weren't profitable and self-sustaining. If they were, then they would still be running.
Right. They'd be repeatable.
Yeah. And maybe it's just because maybe they were kind of working and I just didn't really track them as good as I can, or, you know, maybe certain things changed. So anyway, I just want to know that, like, by the end of 2017, we're not just relying on organic inbound kind of network effect leads. We actually have something that I can point to that when I put X dollars in, we get X dollars out.
That's a good goal.
So another thing that I had here is, this is not super measurable, but I want to keep our current team intact and nurture those teammates and help them grow within the company and hire fewer new people. So as we're launching these new products and new roles, like a customer success role, customer support, those sorts of things, instead of going out and finding new people for those roles, I think we have a lot of great people now who can shift into those roles and grow within the, you know, because we also have a lot of part-time contractors who kind of work with Audience Ops every day, but just a couple hours a day. So I think there's room for those people to grow, and and most of them have expressed interest in that. So that's, you know, the goal is to, I know that we will add new people, like probably add developers, probably, you know, other things. But I want to limit that as much as possible and try to, you know, nurture the people that we have.
Yeah, that's a big challenge, because that by definition means that they're happy. And challenged and fulfilled and are still working there at the end of 2017. That's a challenge as a manager.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall I've been pretty happy with the lack of turnover from employees, and there've been a few people who've moved on and a few kind of bad hires, you know, who kind of flaked out. But the people who are on the team today, I think at least half of them have been on the team for over a year, and a few of them have been with Audience Ops since literally day one. I'm pretty happy with that, and I'd love to see them, you know, continue to grow. The Friday notes emails that I've been sending, I did reduce it down to every 2 weeks instead of every week. I would like to keep with that going into 2017, every 2 weeks at least. Of course, today is Friday and I have not sent that email today. So I don't think it's going to happen today, actually. But anyway, that's a goal. And then the other thing that I actually had this down for 2016 and I didn't do it. I want to try and be more active on social media, especially in niche communities. And I feel like social media has changed a lot, especially with Twitter and I think probably more of these niche communities, like Facebook groups and Slack groups and private, like paid communities and things, more of those have kind of popped up, and I just feel like I'm not in them as much as I can and should be. And
I have a hard time with this one.
I have a really hard time with it. I don't know if it's just like, I don't know.
I don't like the echo chamber when viewed from a certain angle. It feels like a sucker's game. It's like, this isn't really where business is going down. Like, there's no one in there that's running a $25 million a year company, like arguing with people and like talking about little things, at least not much. I feel like it's like this ecosystem of a lot of beginners. I'm also,
that's very true.
I'm skewed by the Shopify and e-commerce world, but it's a lot, huge pyramid, huge bottom of the pyramid of beginners looking up to a few people who are kind of good at self-promotion. But at the same time, I'm like, if you're really killing it, then like, why are you talking to this Facebook group?
Well, that's always been my struggle with it, is that, not that I'm killing it, but like, I am super busy working on the business and I've never been able to put in even 1 hour a week to go into a Facebook group.
Yeah. You know? And I've like, kind of been going the other way and trying to be like, that shit is not, that's not where I need to be.
I don't know. I just feel like, and maybe you're completely right about that, but I feel like there's a bit of a missed opportunity, especially when you're in the mode of launching a brand new product.
Like
this thing needs to gain buzz. And
yeah, I hear that.
For example, like right now, I feel like if I were to launch something on Product Hunt, it would flop no matter what.
Because of the network that you think you should have when you do that, or the leverage there.
Yeah. And I don't feel like I'm in a position today to go into these communities and say, hey guys, I just posted this thing on Product Hunt. I'd appreciate an upvote, because I'd be that guy who hasn't posted anything in a year and now I'm going and asking for favors.
I know, but it feels so dangerous to like invest time in that just for that, when in like how much of a difference is that really going to make?
You know, I've been reading things about like marketing strategies on Quora and doing like even Facebook group, like a systemized strategy for marketing. I don't even know what that looks like, and it's probably something that I won't even do, but it's been on my mind. And I feel like, even just like with social media changing so much and, like how I use Facebook, maybe that should change. Cause I've always been very hesitant to post anything business related on Facebook, cause it's kind of like family and friends, but now it's like, you've got all these Facebook groups that are popping up, and I don't know. And Twitter is kind of starting to take a back seat, and you know, Snapchat, I don't even have an account. It's like, you know,
what? Right. It's tricky. So a lot of it, what I view it as, I'm just not good at everything. It's just a fact. And I'm not good at like that thing. I can't do what Justin Jackson does and pull it off. It's not for me. So I could look at that and say, oh, I should do more of that. Or I can just say, that's just not going to win for me. I'm not going to win in that game. I should just get on the phone with bigger businesses and do demos and form relationships, because that's just what I'm good at. So why don't I just stick to that and try to ignore the social pull and shininess of what's happening out there, out in public?
That's true. Yeah, maybe you're right.
Because there's a lot more money being made outside of that than there is in that.
Yeah. All right.
Even if it's so visible, that you like can't help but be pulled in by it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I've always felt much more comfortable doing is just writing articles, publishing podcasts, and just like creating and teaching new, like putting new stuff out there. I love to do that, but like going onto social networks and groups and like interacting and answering questions and doing that
being like a star, right? Like that's how it feels like it. Yeah. You need to be good at like building an audience and energy around yourself. I'm just not good at that.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. So that's all I had for the business goals. A couple personal ones. Like, actually, I liked what Rob and Mike said in their goals episode about exercise.
I liked that episode. That was good.
Super simple. The idea of just log 100 exercise sessions this year. I never thought about it that way. I mean,
two a week,
but it's almost like it feels different when you say like I want to work out twice a week versus I want to log 100 of these this year. Like 100 seems more attainable.
To me 100 sounds like more than two a week, right? It's the same thing, literally mathematically. It's the same thing, but 100 out of 365, that's a decent amount. So, about a third of your days, you're doing exercise. And I feel like I'm not doing exercise a third of my days, but I am doing it 2 days a week. So whatever the hell it is, yeah, that's one of mine to keep up with the exercise, which is a very strange thing. Usually my goal is get into the exercise. Now I'm officially someone that does exercise regularly 2 days a week. So now it's keep up with it. And I would say it's easier to keep up with than it is to begin, because now I'm addicted. My body feels and looks different than it did 6 months ago. And I losing that sounds ridiculous.
That's awesome. I'm not in that boat at all. I was working out earlier in the year and running pretty regularly. And I was playing tennis for a little while, and I was really getting into that. I was enjoying it. I was actually getting my game was getting a little bit better. And then I hurt my leg, and I was kind of sidelined for 2 months there. And now I'm not doing anything.
Right. Now to get back in, it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that has worked for me is a trainer.
Yeah.
I do a trainer because Tuesdays, Thursdays. Because
you have an appointment and you have to
show up. It's just, and I have it exactly the same time every single week. So I don't think about it at all. Tuesday, that means I need to be there at 8 a.m. Thursday means I need to be there at 8 a.m. That's it. It's, no thought process. And I prepay for a bunch of them, so I don't feel like, oh, I have to give money every time. I just do it once, and then there's no money involved and there's no thinking involved. It's the only way it has worked for me.
I got to do it.
And it's comical. I do half an hour.
Yeah.
I do 8 to 8:30, half an hour twice a week, and like my whole life is different from it. It's crazy.
Oh, they say these interval workouts, you can get them in, much faster than.
Yeah, she just buries me for half an hour until I want to puke at the end of it. And it's insane. It's 1 hour a week, and my whole life is different from an energy level. Like, it's awesome. Hearing you talk about the revenue goals, it does point out to me that I should have more concrete goals. It just feels so. It moves, man. It just moves every day. So I want to say, first, I want to say X number of customers, because I like to break that out.
Like this year in 2017, I'm actually not doing revenue goals. I did that in 2016. But the 2017, I don't really know what to expect in revenue, because it's really more about transitioning to new products.
Yes. So I hear you. And right. So if I say to myself, 250 paying customers on the new product. If you look at that and you say 250 divided by 12 months, that's about 21 new customers a month. You divide that by 4 weeks, it's 5 customers a week. That sounds like a lot for the current situation. So the number of customers doesn't really matter. It is revenue that's more important, but then trying to estimate that and put a goal on that is weird too.
Yeah, you don't know the distribution of the plans and
Right. I don't know if we're considering making a relatively big move that I would talk about in maybe a month or so, which would make more sense at a lower price point. So now the number of customers would be completely off. So I don't know what to think of that. It's like it feels like just a complete guess. Like if someone put a gun to my head and said, put a goddamn number, I guess I'd say about 50K in MRR on the new product by the end of the year. But that's like just making shit up.
I mean, if I had to think about it, not a specific number, but my goal from a financial standpoint by the end of 2017 is just to remain profitable as we are now and change the makeup of our revenue streams to something more like, 50, 25, 25, or, whereas right now it's like, 95,
right, 5. Makes sense. That would be healthy. That would be a healthier business.
Yeah.
And here's one thing, and we should call it a day pretty soon. We don't talk enough about personal finances, because it's personal, So one of my goals, though, is to give myself a raise. Along with the profitability and growth and all that, a lot of it, that we don't talk about because it is personal, is how much you take home personally. And that's definitely one of my big short-term goals. I would like to do it in the first quarter, in the first 3 months of 2017, is give myself a pretty substantial raise. But I do have investors and I do have reality, so I can't just do it. It does feel like it needs to be justified. Was it you telling me about that book, Profit First?
No.
No, someone here in Portland, my buddy John Uwalt, who runs a Roaster Tools, a coffee software company, was telling me about this book called Profit First. And the guy was espousing the first thing you do is you take profit out for yourself. When your business makes money, you take that out
first.
That's
a business, That's
right.
Yeah. We're not going for like ramen profitability here. We have right. families
and,
to support.
Right. Yeah. And no one cares what your business's tax return looks like at the end of the day, right? You're not a public company.
Right.
So that does matter, but your personal tax return, that's also really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's for me, that's the thing I look at every single day. And that's actually, I guess this is not a 2017 goal, but a seemingly never ending goal is when can I get to a point when my take-home salary is not something that I have to think about, and it's just built in, no questions asked. And it's been that way in 2016. I did achieve that, and I was able to raise it to because I had to raise it because my wife's not working, and we have.
Yeah, but there's got to be what you're talking about is the buffer. When is my after-tax take-home not just covering my expenses, but covering it by a decent margin where I'm really. You're really not thinking about that every day, right? And every month and so on. So, I mean, for me, I put that number, I don't know if you care to share it or not, but my number with my family and all that other stuff where there is padding on top of what we spend, realistically is 15K take home after tax, where I have sufficient padding where I'm like, all right, I'm not stressed. And then what I really want to get to is the 20K a month after tax, take home for me personally, and I am not stressed. I'm chilling. I'm going on vacations. I'm buying clothing and shit, and I'm not thinking about it. And I don't care where my kids go to school in terms of tuition, all this other stuff. So that's a lot. You know, 20K take home for me personally, then a co-founder and teammates and taxes, that's like, all right, that's 100K a month and up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we look at like the savings and, you know, not going to get into all the details, but like we've got like a personal rainy day savings for like bills that are or repairs and things that need to come up. So we need to keep that padded. And then we have like a travel fund. And earlier in the year, it was like the house fund. And then we got the house and we kind of depleted that whole thing on the house and these renovations. And now it's about building that back up. But like what I'm running here is a fully self-funded bootstrapped business that's actively reinvesting whatever profits we have into further development of products. So I've always been of the mindset, and I still am right now, is just pay myself the bare minimum that I need. But that being said, like I'm the only, my wife's not working right now. And so like, you know, what we need to run this family and this life here is not a low number, you know?
Right. So. And which is fine. It doesn't matter that it's a low number.
Right.
The only thing that matters, if it was a really low number, if it cost you $3,000 to keep everything running in your life and you're a single 22-year-old, you still want to take home 6 or 7 or 8 or 10.
Yes. You want to be able to pad right. those
so if,
savings.
Right.
Yeah.
If your nut is 10K a month, then you still want 15 or 20 or more. So this is a tricky topic because it's personal, but I think it's got to be in the mix of the goals, because the business is one thing, but we run businesses for ourselves, not for the public good.
Absolutely. And you have to have a very, very realistic look at it. And I think, you know, you have to move fast. I know this episode is really running long here, but I guess one thing that I've been thinking more about as I look back at the last few years, and I'm really proud of this in 2016, is how fast I've been able to make decisions and make moves. Whereas I feel like in years past, I've been really, really paralyzed and slow to make a decision about something. And I just drive myself crazy to the detriment of the whole business and the decision itself. Whereas now it's like, I just kind of like think through each thing, and I know that like if I spend more than an hour on this decision, then I made the wrong decision, you know.
And okay. I was gonna say, do you have like a framework or something? Because that is just it's a never ending struggle. That's hard.
Yeah, I mean there are things that I struggle with in terms of like, you know, weighing pros and cons, but like,
yeah, you don't want to make the wrong decision.
Yeah,
especially when they're big.
But I think
we're trying to hammer out a decision right now internally, and it is not easy. The only thing that I've come to, at least in this current iteration, this turn of the decision making thing, is you know, Ruben Gomez, he's the one that I give a lot of credit to in that conversation I've talked about before, where I asked him about pricing and how he gets his team on board with pricing changes. And he looked at me like, what?
I just
That's
do
your
it.
Call. There's no getting the team on board. Just do whatever you want. That's your responsibility. That conversation really stuck with me, and it affects other things too. So I'm definitely I was like emboldened by that. And now other decisions that I've made after that have emboldened me further to be like, one way or another, at the end of the day, blah, 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 this is your company and you just make the goddamn decision. Don't. So do you struggle internally, like within yourself?
I think I've just learned that I can't stand that feeling of being undecided on something. And I hate the feeling of like, oh, we have to debate this and that. I would just rather have a plan in place and be in execution mode. And I just feel more comfortable in that state. So like from day to day, I know that like if I can just decide one way or another, then I can get back to that state of like, okay, just go through the list that I laid out.
Okay. You know? And my worry is all about the making the wrong decision. If we start going down this path, I'll regret that we went down this path instead of the other path.
I got to pull this up, but what really... the revelation I had was like in early 2015, when I was struggling to make the decision whether or not to sell Restaurant Engine. And then at the same time, struggling with the decision of what should my next business be. Like that was like a 3 to 4 month period there.
Right. You're in limbo.
Where it was like, I was literally driving myself insane and my wife and my family and like sleepless nights. And I just couldn't take it. And it snapped. But then I was listening to, I don't know the guy's name, but I was listening to Amy Porterfield's podcast and she had her business coach on. I don't know the guy's name, but he said something, and I'm going to totally butcher this quote or paraphrase it or whatever, but he was saying that your goal as a business owner is you need to get to a point where you are making as many decisions as fast as possible. That's the metric that you want to look at, because the faster that you can make decisions, the faster you can get on to the next decision. And the more decisions that you make, the better and better you get at making decisions, and the better your batting average is. Because with every decision, there's going to be a right and wrong answer, and you learn from the wrong ones. And so all that learning of making the wrong decisions, you fold back into your whole decision-making process. And so it's like a loop that the faster you can go with that, the better your instincts become. And that's what really kind of,
that feels like it has some truth in it. I don't know how I feel about it overall, but I think it's still instructive to make the decision.
Like that's not exactly how he put it. That's how I took away from it. But
right.
Yeah. I don't know. And I think
make the decision, learn from it instead of just waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah. And I found that writing things down, getting them out of my head has really helped. I write almost daily in this, I use Day One app to just jot down notes and like mostly incoherent bullet points of like pros about this idea, pros about that idea. And that if I were to go down this route, here's what that plan would look like. I would need to do it this, this, and this and roll out in this way. And then I kind of step back and look at that and say, okay, that's something I want to do. Or it's like with the decision to do the SaaS, it was like, all right, well, what will I need in order to feel confident about this decision? I'll need to validate it in this way. So then I got to take these steps and all that.
Yeah. My worry is I have trouble with the signal versus noise thing, because I talk to people all day and a lot of my thinking on a current decision is based on the last few people I talked to. And it's so hard to get away from that. So a lot of times I'm like, this is the decision I want to make, but I'm just going to sleep on it. I'm just going to take this off of my stress table and not even think about it. And then a week from now, if I'm in a completely different place on that decision, then I know I like don't have my shit straight and I'm just going by my gut, which is fine, but at least I know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, homie. 2017. Big year. Right,
here we go.
All right, cool, man. Good stuff, man. Have a good
good
weekend.
Good holiday. Good New Year.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great New Year. Happy holidays, Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, etc. And we'll see you in the New Year.
All right, bye.